Case 57 from the Blue Cliff Record. Zhao Zhou's Stupid Oaf. Some of you may identify with this. Pointer, before you have penetrated, it all seems like a silver mountain, like an iron wall. When you have been able to penetrate, from the beginning it was yourself that was the silver mountain, the iron wall. If someone asks me, so what? I would just say to him, here, if you can reveal an action and observe an environment, occupy the essential bridge without letting profane or holy pass, this would not be beyond your inherent capacity. If, on the other hand, you are not yet thus, observe the look of an ancient. The case. A monk asked Zhao Zhou, the ultimate path has no difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. What is not picking and choosing? Zhao Zhou said, in the heavens and on the earth, I alone am the honored one. The monk said, this is still picking and choosing. Zhao Zhou said, stupid oaf, where is the picking and choosing? The monk was speechless. And the verse. Deep as the ocean, firm as a mountain, a mosquito sports in the fierce wind of the sky. An ant tries to shake an iron pillar, picking and choosing a cloth drum under the eaves. So already our second day of retreat. For many of us now, so many journeys into this wilderness. For some of us, the first time in this form. But yet, for all of us, we would not be here if we had not run out of options. We all are looking for something, looking for the resolution of this great problem of our life, looking for the resolution of this great opportunity of being alive. So we enter again into these stories, focusing on our great friend and tormentor, Zhao Zhou, who both invites us and pokes and prods us, challenges us. And these koan, although we Zen, or in Zen, we talk endlessly about the value of not talking. So I will pile some more words on here. But this koan tradition has been commented on, and then comments on the comments, and some spark in these koan, in these short stories, these brief stories that somehow have made their way. They were written down several centuries after these masters were in action. But somehow the action, something surprising, some meeting that has happened is passed down to us as an entry point. I'm so taken by the pointer, the introduction here. Before you have penetrated, it all seems like a silver mountain, an iron wall. When you have been able to penetrate from the beginning, it was yourself that was the silver mountain, the iron wall. When we come on retreat, or even when we sit in Zazen for a moment or two, we are in some ways creating trouble. In some way, it's so much easier to drift along, to be carried along, but not really so. As we live our life day to day, all of us in some way encounter this dissatisfaction that the Buddha spoke of. Something deep inside us, sometimes maybe just a subtle quivering, not quite right. Sometimes a wild suffering that we can barely restrain ourselves from running out the door. The Buddha taught that this is noble. From the ordinary mind perspective, nothing noble about suffering, and most of us would definitely prefer not to suffer, not to be uncomfortable. I so vividly remember when our daughter Rachel was born, they took her out of the delivery room, and I accompanied her, of course leaving her mother on the table there, but I went with her, and they did some tests, checked her pupils and looked at her color, and then they said, and now we're going to test her blood to make sure everything's okay. And I said, well, how are you going to get her blood? They said, well, we're going to stick a needle in her heel. And I said, no, you're not. And they said, yes, we are. And that was, for me, the first moment of parenting when I realized that I could not protect this most precious being. That I could not protect her even now, 10 minutes into the world of this burning world of oxygen. And I could not save her from this, which is to her everlasting benefit. If we could protect our children, if we could protect our friends, if we could protect ourselves, we would be totally lost. Coming on retreat, entering the Zen path, we make a radical vow to stop running away. We plant ourselves firmly on the chair, on the cushion, and we vow to sit here. Each one of us, of course, the Buddha, taking up this ancient vow to find out for ourselves, to turn toward this what we call suffering. And the Buddha taught that this is not a problem. Even our aversion to it is not a problem. But when we come up against it, when we come up against our life, and when our carefully cultivated delusions are stripped away, all of us, I hope, begin to find that we are not who we thought we were. This indeed is a dying. We talk about the sword that gives life and the sword that brings death. Both the living and the dying are required, moment after moment. But we come up, and we come up against that moment when everything we know, all of our skill, all of our goodwill, and fine intention is not enough. And not enough, not in the good way, but clearly out of options. When I first began sitting retreats, I would find myself in these places, these quandaries of at the end of my rope, at the iron mountain, the silver mountain, the iron wall. And of course I knew that I had come to the wrong place, so I would in some way drift off or backtrack and try to find my way around the mountain. And I sincerely hoped that someday I would find my way around the mountain. And I suspected if I sat enough retreats or if I stayed up late enough doing zazen that I would find my way through. The truth is that we cannot find our way through. The Silver Mountain will not let us go around or over. So high you can't get over it, so wide you can't get around it, so low you can't go under it. O rock of my soul, as the song goes. And so I was sure that I was doing it wrong. And of course I was. I so loved in our introductions, our encouragements, when I mentioned this continuous practice, and my troublesome colleague James reminded us it's also continuous mistake. We are all practicing for the wrong reason. And this is exactly right. And so over time, I began to see that these dead ends were actually not what the problem was. And as I move through retreats now, that I find I still come to these same places, and they still have the same feeling tone they did when I first began. And for me, that feeling tone is of aversion, of I don't like this. But as it comes up again and again for all of us, as our latest strategy is foiled, as our latest awakening becomes a memory, we are once again up against the iron wall. Slowly there is an opportunity for us to learn that this place that we don't want, this, in fact, as it appears for most of us, it's exactly what we don't want. It's not sort of like, kind of not so good. It's like exactly the thing that we most don't want to be with. And the encouragement is Rinzai's do nothing. Do nothing. And this doing nothing requires an active engagement and an active participation. It requires some fundamental choice and some great great vow, great compassionate vow, to do that which we cannot do. If you think you know what you're doing, if you think you know what it is when this place of not picking and choosing, if you think you know, you are in the land of the brambles and the briars. The mind so wants to help, and it will come in and do whatever it can to try to assist. But as we chanted this morning, as we recited in the Shinshin Ming today or yesterday, to pursue the great way with the mind is surely a great mistake. So this monk has the audacity to go up to the great Zhao Zhou and to pick a fight with him, right? Most of us, when the teacher blabs on, we nod our head and say, "Oh yeah, wow, that's great. Oh, that's really nice. Boy, what you said yesterday really helped me." Of course, words touch us, and quite wonderful to appreciate that. But for all of us, someone else's words are not enough. And in our practice, we must be audacious. We must have confidence to risk disagreeing, to risk showing up as ourselves, even when we don't know what that means. So this student challenges him, provokes him, but perhaps just asks a burning question. What is not picking and choosing? What is not being attached to preferences? What is awakening? And Zhao Zhou, in his great kindness, does not explain, but Zhao Zhou steps into the words of the Buddha, in heaven above and earth below, I am the only one. These are the words that are attributed to the Buddha when he was first born. In heaven above and earth below, I am the only one. The student responds as we might first upon hearing these words. Well, aren't you picking and choosing? But Zhao Zhou, in fact, was presenting something that we talk about endlessly. This possibility of stepping into the world of thusness, this I am the only one, is not the little I, not that I get my way all the time, not that I am in control of my life. But the truth of our experience, there is no way we can be anyone other than ourself. We often imagine the world as a backdrop, like a stage set, we are the actors that strut and fret our time upon the stage. So an interesting metaphor, and certainly seems that there is a world out there and I am in here. So the basic dichotomy is me and everything else. But in our practice, in our upright silence, we have the opportunity to look more deeply into this matter. We can perhaps get glimpses that this world of 1, 2, 3, this world of separation, is only part of this great flowering, this very personal work we are doing is, in a sense, similar to a poet who goes deeply inside herself to find the words to allow something very personal and intimate to come out. And if she does her work, if she allows it to come through, then what she produces is not just about her. As I read, I too say yes, yes. And so this matter we are investigating, while it is, there is nothing more personal and intimate, so important to remember. I remember our first teacher. He said, well, the important thing on Sesshin is not to take anything personally. We might say this is a wonderful instruction for our life. We take it personally and we think, this is me as opposed to you, or this is what is wrong with me, or this is what is special about me. And the teaching is that what we are encountering is life itself. So the contraction that you experience is not just you. This wonderful story that Melissa brought in from Entangling Vines, do even Zen masters go to hell? And Zhao Zhou says, let me be the first. Because this is our life. This wishing it were different is our life. This problematic person we are, the one who forgets, the one who gets lost again and again in the same way, the one who doesn't have enough faith, who doesn't have enough concentration. This very one is a human life. To study the way is to study the self is to forget the self. So we are exploring human life. We are exploring life in the form of in these first two lines of the verse, before you have penetrated, it all seems like a silver mountain, like an iron wall. When you have been able to penetrate from the beginning, it was yourself that was the silver mountain. The iron wall. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably if you'd like to move out from behind the fireplace. So, observations, reflections, questions. Yeah.
Well, I've come up against a few of these iron mountains in my time, and every time they present as that thing that, you know, this has to be the exception. This can't be the thing that I'm supposed to be, you know, up against, right? Not this one.
Right.
And the only way that I can, the only way that that confrontation, if you will, happens is when there is absolutely no other choice. That it's just totally back again, you know, there's nothing else. And this happens again and again in various ways. And so I find myself thinking, well, what good is this thing that I do, this Zazen, this Zen practice, if I end up finding that I can't, you know, that the silver mountain doesn't go away, it isn't resolved, and until there's just nothing. I mean, wouldn't that happen anyway? And the only thing I can figure is that no, it wouldn't, because there are so many ways to avoid it, you know, and that maybe this is the shortcut to, okay, I don't want to avoid it anymore. Bring it on, even though I don't realize when it...
I don't know what I signed up for.
That one, yeah. But then it's too late, so...
Well, and I do think there's something about painting ourselves into a corner. You know, I forget, someone talks about it's really important, helpful to ride to Sashin in someone else's car so you don't have the keys. We sort of know that we're getting into it, but then when it arises, it's always fresh and new, right? And you know, where are those keys? Yeah.
Yeah. I was really following along with what Kay said. I was really struck with the thing you said about how oftentimes what we find showing up isn't sort of like the thing that we least want to have. It's exactly the thing that we least want to face, and it really strikes me how, you know, that probably is not an accident. You know, that this one thing, and it shape shifts because it isn't always the same thing. But when it comes up, there is this sense of, oh my God, this is the thing that I really really don't want to be with, and here it is yet again, and it seems so familiar, and I just think, oh my God, you know, like Kate said, you know, how can I do all this Zen practice and keep ending up in these spots where I'm, you know, where I'm just as bad off as you know, it's maybe a little different thing that is the big problem, but again, I'm just lost and helpless and facing this thing that I just so desperately want to not be.
You know, this is a little bit like what we were talking about yesterday. The difference, it appears to me, is that we're still in hell, but we're awake in hell. And we've chosen that as our path. Mm. And of course, we have, they're insidious and they go on forever, ideas about what Zen is going to do for us.
Right.
That's right down, I mean, we all do. And those are the things that keep burning up, really, in the fires of hell. I could give you my list. There are certain things that are really unrealistic. Maybe Zen will make me taller. that sounds ridiculous, right? But maybe Zen will make a complete personality transplant for me. Is very similar to that. Maybe. And then this, you know, I also love that line at the beginning about you come against the wall and then you are the wall. And this form-fitting exact thing, I think for me it lets me see my deep addiction to some of those hell realms. That I'm a little bit complicit in creating the beautiful shape that only this form of hell will match. And there's some way that we cling. You know, picking and choosing, it sounds like, yeah, I want to be happy, I want to be... But on a deeper level, on a much more subtle level, we keep choosing the same kinds of hell. And I think it's important to see how we're complicit. And not to just go, oh, okay, I've seen that I'm complicit, I'm done. Then you've got to really be awake in that hell realm, that it isn't the fault of the world or other people. It just is reality. And you know what I always like to say, if you try to fight reality, who wins? Reality always wins.
I was struck when you said that the hell realm that we get to visit on Sashin is always fresh, but it's always stale. And one of the things I realize for myself is that I've been to a lot of sashins now, and I still have this sneaking belief that I'm not going to have to deal with this. I'm really not going to have to. Mm-hmm. And then I come here, you know, and there it is, and there's no escape. But the hope of avoidance springs
eternal. The hope of avoidance springs eternal.
I like your reminder that suffering is noble, because sometimes you just need a little encouragement, you know, just to keep moving, keep, you know, get back in the game, Diane, you know, just out you go. So just so that, you know, when we are in all of these realms that are so terrifying to face, that just having a little bit of heart that, okay, just go.
On one retreat there was a student who was really struggling and went to the Tanto, and the Tanto took her outside and said, you need a glass of water and a good night's sleep and you can get up in the morning. And that's, you know, for all of us, that little bit of encouragement. Yep, glass of water, you know, then back in the game.
Yeah, I recall going to my teacher saying, I'm on fire, and he hands me a coal.
Right, well, and these different kinds of kindness. But truly, we think, oh, what I need is this. And then we get, sometimes it's worse. And then there's the gift, the terrible gift of that.
In a different context, I came across this cartoon, like a New Yorker cartoon recently, that I found most useful. It's sort of like this same Silver Mountain thing, and it's a picture of an animal painting. He's painting a mountain scene, he's painting an ocean scene, and in the foreground, in all these scenes, there's this kind of this big, white, conical thing. It's like in front of all the scenes, this sort of dominating and distracting thing. And the thing is, he's a rhinoceros. So you see this. So whenever I have this sort of thing, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, this is my reaction to it, my reaction to it.
Wonderful.
I think I started practicing thinking, you know, Zen would, you know, like all of us, create something new for me, and then I could be part of the others. And I think what I'm realizing now is that what I'm going through is all the others, what everybody else is going through. So it just, the suffering creates an opportunity to find the compassion and connection that doesn't come from seeking to attain or get somewhere different, you know, that it feels more of, you know, just the reassuring words that everybody speaks, that we're all going through the same thing, that it, you know, this is our home, not something to escape. This is our condition. This is our connection with other people. That it changes, you know, how I approach practice when I'm realizing that. So.
Thank you.
And just following up on that and what Bob said earlier about the freshness being stale, one of the hallmarks of my sesshin is somewhere on day one or two, I swear that it's my last sesshin ever. I'm really never coming back. And it's pretty consistent. It happens almost every time, I think. And then, but then it gets like, it gets sessioned away. You know? Or something.
Sessioned away.
That's all.
Can you just explain a little this? How does it get, what happens to it?
As we begin tomorrow.
Will you hold my car keys for a day?
We should get a safe.
Put them all in.
Yeah, it's important to me to know that I can get away. I can leave.
Yeah.
That little knowledge means that, oh, this really is in my hands.
Yeah. Hmm.
And you can leave the shame.
Well said.
Really?
Yeah. Could you just do part two? What can't you leave?
You can't get away.
I have had the experience of this layering effect this week. Like, I was really sad about a situation on Tuesday when I was at work, and we were jumping through hoops for one of my customers, and one of the guys in the back comes by my cubicle and he goes, "Oh, you know, we're not going to be able to ship that stuff out today." And I just looked at him and I went, really? And then went back to what I was doing, and he goes, oh, you're not mad? And I'm like, no, we were doing him a huge favor when we got the stuff that was urgent out before Thanksgiving. And he's like, oh, no, we'll ship it today. And then I was mad at him. And now, here I am, sitting with the stuff that was said, and it's like, are we juicing the damned onion? Never mind, peeling it back, you know? And it's like, okay, I can leave, but I still have to take me with me. And I'm just kind of confused and watching.
You know, I'm not exactly sure what Dominic was talking about being sashined away, but I think he might be pointing to it a little bit. I'm confused, he said. And, you know, our normal reaction to I'm confused is, I don't want to be confused.
But I'll make up some story and I can't, that isn't getting pulled off.
Right, there's just like, it goes back to Sengsan's verse, the picking and choosing. Is, you know, I like it, I don't like it, but this real reality of no escape, it is so important, what Josh was just pointing to. You know, we really can leave. We have all these options for staying here and leaving. In fact, even Zen, I know people who use Zen as a way to leave. And that's one reason we have encounters in Doksan, because our great wish is that you don't do that, you don't use it. But we do, and it's just realistic. And you're pointing to a couple of ways we do it. Is it possible to just be confused? Is it possible to just have a pain in the knee? Is it possible to be ecstatic, you know, without favoring that? Is it possible to let these things go? That's, I think, one of the things that I've learned, that it is possible. And you know, I just want to go back for a second to James's teacher giving him a hot coal when he was on fire. That's incredibly skillful if conditions are correct. And conditions are always moving. And apparently it was a good thing for James, because look, here he is.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. Yeah, I want to talk to them. Yeah, look at the trouble we're in.
A glass of water and a nap.
I went through a period many years ago of writing Zen poems in a Dr. Seuss style. And this koan reminds me of a part of one. There's no place to run to, there's no place to be. There's not a spot on the planet that isn't just me.
So what do you do during retreat?
but right, that's it. Right. We tend to divide ourselves. The parts we don't like, we cut off. But the reality is, in heaven above and earth below. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a form of narcissism. It's a form of realizing this.
Thing one and thing not two.
And I think it circles back to what Kate started us out with this why do I keep coming back, and this the possibility of choice. I mean, we will all die, it will all be taken away, it will all come crashing down, but there is this possibility of not waiting until it's snatched from us, but heading into it. And I think that's why, you know, so in truth, for all of us to be here and choose to stay, even when every fiber of our being says, this is ridiculous, I'm hopeless, I might as well, you know, do something else, that the fact that any of us is free to leave. There's no one that says, you have to do this. And in that choosing is part of the power and part of our freedom.